You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Canada's population is increasingly diverse, yet white workers are still privileged in the workforce. This is true both in the kinds of jobs that are available to them and the ease with which they find work. A new study produced for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives analyzes data from the 2006 census and concludes that racialized Canadians face systemic discrimination in the workforce. Grace Edward Galabuzzi is co-author with Sheila Block of Color-Coded Labor Market, The Gap for Racialized Workers. And Grace Edward Galabuzzi joins me on the phone this morning from Ottawa. Hello, Grace Edward.
Good morning, Jen.
Now, I wanted to ask you, first of all, about the term that you use, racialized Canadians. What does that mean?
It describes the group of Canadians that are referred to by the federal government as visible minorities. We think that visible minorities is problematic in a number of ways. One is that it assumes that this group are always going to be minorities, and they're not necessarily minorities in particular communities, certainly not minorities in the city of Toronto, and probably not, will soon not be a minority in Vancouver. Secondly, it's a euphemism of sorts, because when you talk about visible minorities, you might be talking about visibility, which does not compute to what's happening in the labor market. So we use a term that refers to what we think is a key phenomenon in understanding the experience, which is that this group is racialized, and they're understood through a racial lens, and that's why they're often, their labor is valued a certain way, that's why their human capital is valued a certain way, and that may impact their access to employment and opportunities.
Now, you make the case that there's a color code firmly in place in Canada. How does it affect racialized workers?
It affects racialized workers by denying them opportunity or equal opportunity when it comes to the competition for jobs as well as for compensation. That's what we found in the our analysis of the census data that we did, looking at data from 2001 to 2005. What we found essentially is that racialized group members, although they are ready to work, they are more available for work than other Canadians are. They tend to have higher levels of unemployment than the rest of the Canadian population, and they tend to be paid substantially less than the rest of the population, and they tend to be clustered in low-paying, highly precarious sectors of the economy.
Are there differences? Well, presumably there are. What differences did you find among the many racialized groups in Canada?
Within the category itself, yes, it's true that there are differences, and I think that it's really important to identify some of those differences. At least two groups seem, based on this data, seem to be doing much better than the rest of the others. The overwhelming majority of the groups are doing fairly poorly, consistent with our findings. But the Japanese and the Filipinos seem to buck the trend somewhat, the Japanese more so than the Filipinos. And there is some variation even within the groups themselves. The Arabs and West Asians, for instance, and the Koreans are doing much worse than the Chinese and South Asians, although those groups also do fairly poorly. The Latin Americans will fall in that other category along with blacks. But in spite of the fact that there is some variation within the category, the overwhelming majority of the groups that are characterized by that category are doing significantly poorly than the rest of the Canadian population.
How does it break down between men and women?
There's also a gender gap. There's a significant gender gap. There's a gap in terms of unemployment rates. For instance, racialized men are 24% more likely to be unemployed than non-racialized men. when it comes to racialized women, they are 48% more likely to be unemployed than non-racialized men. So there's a significant gap in terms of employment. It's also a significant gap in terms of income between men and women within the category, as well as women versus the highest earning group, which is non-racialized men.
You identified a number that racialized groups earn 80 cents for every dollar.
And that is significant in terms of the numbers, the amount of money that they essentially not able to have when they have to operate in the same environment as everybody else. They are subject to the same cost of living. They have to buy the same housing. They have to buy the same food. They have to pay for the same transportation. They incur the same costs. So in essence, the fact that they're getting 80 cents to the dollar really has an impact on how they're able to operate within society. The other impact that we see very clearly is the extent to which they are disproportionately represented amongst those who are poor. So it leads to a higher level of poverty, and we've talked about the racialization of poverty as being a growing concern in that regard.
Now, people say things like, it takes time for immigrants to integrate, and they use that as an explanation for why we see these kinds of numbers. Is that fair comment?
I think there's an extent to which that is a factor that needs to be taken into consideration. I think to some extent we always take that into consideration. Except that if you look at the same cohort of immigrants, those who are coming from racialized populations and those who are coming from non-racialized populations, you again see a significant gap. You see a gap between racialized men and non-racialized men immigrants. You see a gap between racialized women and non-racialized women immigrants. So the clearly the problem is not just what people refer to as the immigration effect. The problem goes beyond that. And if you look at successive generations, which is something that we looked at partly to answer that question. Yes, you see that the biggest gap is when you look at the first generation. But the gap persists in second generation and also in the third generation. It shrinks significantly in the third generation, right? You're a lot closer to parity in the third generation, but the problem is that that does not take into account the fact that second and third generation immigrants, racialized immigrants, tend to have an education advantage over the rest of the Canadian population. So that advantage is not translating into the compensation or income advantage that one would expect. So clearly there is more to the problem than the issue of the immigration effect. And I think that, again, that can be demonstrated by looking at the same cohort and looking at racialized and non-racialized immigrants, where there are gaps, as well as second and third generation, where you still have a gap, certainly a significant one in the second generation, and less so in the third.
What's the most troubling aspect of this research, of your findings, for you?
The fact that the gap persists, but also that if you look at the economy from 2001 to 2005, what you had is a significant growth in the economy. We've been told that perhaps the best way to deal with these inequalities and these disparities in income is by ensuring that the economy grows and grows in a robust way. We had robust growth over that period of time. Unfortunately, during that period of time, although the economy grew by about 13%, the incomes of Canadians grew by 2.7%. Incomes of non-racialized Canadians grew by 2.7%. The incomes of racialized Canadians actually declined. They actually declined over a period of time when the economy was expanding. So it's difficult to argue that the solution to the problem is the expansion of the economy. I think clearly what needs to happen is that we need some kind of state intervention. We need legislation that will ensure that we are able to even out some of those inequalities so that we have a level playing field and people can, regardless of their race, can have access to employment. The other real problem here is that the fastest growing segments of our population are Aboriginal populations and racialized populations. By the year 2030, one in every three Canadians will be racialized. If we cannot resolve the issue of equal access to opportunities, equal access and to income and to occupations, what we will essentially have is a growing segment of our population that is being left further and further behind. And I do not even want to speculate as to what that would mean socially if it is happening along racial lines. So I think that these are very worrying signs. I think that what this says is that we need to focus some public policy attention on this issue. We need to, again, let's talk about employment equity as an important response to this problem. We need to address issues of racialization of poverty very directly through targeted programs and policies so that we can reestablish the promise of equality for all in Canada.
Now, you based your research on data from the 2006 census before the economic downturn hit in 2008, but I guess we're not going to find out the answer to what happened to racialized workers because the Harper government has scrapped the long form on the census.
Well, we have some sense of what's happening because in many cases, some of the areas of the economy where they are employed, for instance, like manufacturing, were hard hit by the recession. So we know that although we have not had access to the data to be able to do the analysis, we know that they are being impacted adversely. We also know that the response to the recession has been an expansion in terms of types of work, precarious forms of work in many sectors. And that, again, has a greater impact on racialized groups. So we know that that really is not a pretty picture. We would love to have reliable data so that we do not simply speculate, so that we can actually crank the numbers and be able to better understand what the situation is. And I think that I speak for many researchers when I say that it is a real tragedy that the federal government decided to interfere in the census process and remove the long-form census. It has been a critical part of the process of better understanding what the experience of Canadians as a whole, but particular groups within the Canadian context, and this would be really, really missed. I hope that it's not too late for that decision to be changed, and I hope that a future government will look very quickly at a change in that decision, because clearly it's going to be that much harder for us to draw some of the critical understandings that we need to or insights that we need to understand what's going on with Canadians if we don't have the long-form census.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me this morning, Grace Edward.
Appreciate the opportunity, Jen, and thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
I've been speaking with Grace Edward Galabuzzi. He's co-author with Sheila Block of Canada's Color-Coded Labour Market. You can find a link to the report on our website, cooperadio.org/redeye.